The Leafs cast is back, and Ryan Allison was just traded at the deadline. We get into all the Maple Leafs news and the Ryan Allison transaction today. Let's go.
Great pressure here from the Maple Leafs. Power play. Riley on the left wing side. Top to Marner again. Top of the circle. On to Matthews. Holds a pass in, deflected by Nylander. Over top of the goal. Another chance for Willie. Another shot stop. Tavares scores!
I'm very curious to know what my trade value was on the open podcast market here. What'd you get for me?
Very, very low.
Great.
The value.
Future considerations.
Traded for pennies on the dollar. Great.
That guy's been traded around more than Max Domi. Is Max Domi always get traded, or is it free agency? He's been everywhere.
No, you're thinking of Anthony Duclair, who's on team number 8 in 12 years. He's the trade machine.
Toffoli is on 4 Canadian teams so far. He's working on his
Infinity Gauntlet?
Yeah, that's it, the Gauntlet. Yeah, he's working on his Gauntlet.
Well, joke's on you guys. I had a full no-move trade clause, just like...
You're staying local.
Just like Bertuzzi, so... I'm staying local. You're stuck with me.
Didn't Connor DeWar also have a no-trade clause or something that he waived to come to Toronto?
I didn't see that. That's funny.
Maybe I was getting – there are so many deals. There's something like that, like a fourth-line guy. I was like, why does he have a no-trade clause? Like, that's wild.
Well, the team that we have now is the team that we're stuck with. Ride or die by these boys. They're going to take us to the promised land. What do you guys think? Let's talk Leafs.
So we go into the deadline. We haven't potted in a little bit, and the Leafs are obviously hot, hotter than they've been basically all season. And so you think about the mentality going into the deadline, right? It was a lot of positivity and a lot of hope in the team. You know, obviously having a lot of pretty big wins against Vegas, wins against New York, just wins against other playoff teams. A couple of tough losses in there. And the Leafs make the call to not go all in. Less in than they've been, probably since we've started making the playoffs in 2016. This is the least significant deadline day that we've had. Would you guys agree?
There certainly wasn't a lot going on. I mean, it didn't help that last year we sold the farm. We cleared out picks both from last year and this year. We now have, like, in the next, like, 3 years, I think we have, like, 4 picks in the first 4 rounds. It's crazy. But, I think, like, overall, I mean, the media always likes hyping up Toronto and what Toronto's going to do, and there are a couple names kind of bouncing around. And I think looking at this team and looking where some of the holes are, there is definitely some expectation that the players, like, Leafs could have had moves made, but I guess the prices just weren't there. Or maybe Brad just is happy with the team he's inherited and said Matthews is going to do it all himself. But
I don't think that's what it was at all. There's no way that Brad Tree Living is looking at this team and said, we don't need to add anything. Like, this team is surefire way going to get us to the Stanley Cup final. Like, every team has holes. That's just the nature of the salary cap era. It's just like, even the best team in the league isn't like, you know, Team Canada Olympics, where you have like 12 centers who are all the best centers of the league on your team. Everyone has areas that they can improve on, even if it's just like depth in a certain position. And I think that all of us would agree that the Leafs have some pretty glaring holes, namely right side defense or third line center or depth scoring to an extent. Like, there's lots of things you could point out to say the Leafs needed. So I don't think Brad was saying our team is good enough, we don't need to make any trades. I think it was a mixture of the prices were too high for what he wanted, and the cupboards were too bare, and he didn't want to empty them completely. I think that's what it came down to.
That's fair. So just to recap for the listeners of all the trades that went down kind of in the days leading up to the deadline. Coming into the Leafs, we have Ilya Lyubushkin, steady right-handed D.
Former Maple Leaf.
former Leaf coming back. He's probably the most significant name, which is maybe not what we expected, considering he was like a middling D on Anaheim where we got him from. But so Lyubushkin's in. Joel Edmondson is in from Washington. Connor Dewar is in from Minnesota. Dewar is a centerman. Edmondson's a left-handed D. I don't know if we want to talk about Cade Weber, but we picked him up from Carolina. He's just an AHLer. But he's an AHLer who's 6'6" every night. So
I mean, I think what should be noted about those three players is, like, all together, I think we gave up something like 2 third-round picks and like 3 sixth-round picks or something like that. There was no first-round picks given up. We didn't really have any seconds, but no second-round picks going up. None of our key prospects were given up. I think we gave up one of our prospects for Dewar. Is it
Dmitry Ovechkinov? Ovechkinov.
I think it's
Ovechkinov.
I just figured if I couldn't pronounce his name, then he must not be very high on our depth chart.
Might actually be half the size of Cade Weber. I think he's like he's a slim boy. But
the point being is Brad really worked around the fringes here. He traded some depth picks that don't mean too much. The odds of any third to fourth to sixth round pick actually making it to the NHL is quite low. It doesn't happen very frequently. So what we gave up is probably nothing of substance, but we didn't necessarily get back any needle movers either. We got back a couple of depth defensemen. Maybe they'll play higher in the lineup with someone like Riley, like we've seen Lyubushkin play with Riley, but that doesn't mean he's a number two defenseman. That just means he's playing with a number one defenseman. And then, our forward acquisition is probably going to be our fourth line center. So we traded not much and got not much, and that's about as much as we did this trade deadline.
So, Ryan, if you had to give the Leafs a letter grade for how they did it on the deadline, what would you say?
That's a tricky question, Tim. I would say that I would give them a B- for what Brad was trying to do. And I mean that in the sense that it's easy to give the A or whatever, a higher grade for bringing in a big piece. We saw all these huge deals go down in the West where these big names were going out. And
Vegas
pick up half the league. We saw Winnipeg bolster, Vancouver
Colorado.
Picked up a lot. Colorado, yeah. So we saw the West get a lot stronger. They're making all these big deals, trading out first-round picks through 2026, which is wild. And Brad, I don't think had any intention of doing that. He looked at what we have and said, no, I don't want to give up a first round pick. I want to trade for depth pieces. Okay, so let's just look at the depth piece market and say, because if what you want is depth pieces, you bring in the perfect depth piece. Just as an example, I'll say like Luke Shen from last year. Like, he cost a third round pick and he was one of our best defensemen in the playoffs. Like, that was a huge acquisition that was just a depth piece. So if we made a move like that, I'd say A+ to Bradtree Living this thing. But I give him a B- because he made some depth moves that didn't really solve some of the issues. Like, we still don't have a third line center. We're going to try Camp there again, I guess, even though we've kind of already established that doesn't work. Yeah. We only brought in one right-handed D and another left-handed D when we'd had like six of them on our roster a couple nights ago in one of our games here. And the D that we did bring in, they're big. We got bigger. There are three Ryans each, if that's the new metric that we're using to measure size. But like, I think of the problems that we had in last year's playoffs, why we struggled against Tampa and why we ultimately lost to Florida. We had a lot of problems with our D getting a puck out of our zone. We didn't have any good puck movers and depth scoring. We couldn't score against Florida at all, and we didn't address either of those at all. Like, we have worse puck moving defensemen than last year and worse depth scoring than last year, and we didn't what we brought in isn't even like marginally helping that. If anything, it's either lateral transaction or getting worse.
Klingberg was not the answer.
Mm-hmm. So I think B-, like, he did what he needed to do, and we kept our assets. I do think it's important that we keep some of these assets moving forward, especially with our lack of picks next year. But he maybe C plus, B minus. He didn't do anything other than get bigger, which I think we'll talk about a little bit here. Might be important, but that's my take on it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I look at Ilya Labushkin is a name that, like, I guess he's been around for a week, almost 2 weeks now, and I have been happy with how he's performed next to Riley. You like, it has been a couple years since he was on Toronto, so you wonder, like, has he lost a step? He was horrible on Anaheim, but then Anaheim's horrible in general, so you're not sure quite how he's going to transition back, but he seems to have fit in, which is good. So I don't know if I would say that's, like, single-handedly saving Brad's deadline, but I wasn't too happy. Like, apparently Boston was also on Joel Edmondson, and Joel Edmondson is notorious for brutally cross-checking other teams.
Breaking a stick on Wayne Simmons' neck.
Yeah, so love having a guy like that. Can root for him. Anyways, I don't know. And nothing against Joel Edmondson. He's a serviceable defenseman, but, like, is he better than some of the options we have on the left? I don't think so. And, like, Connor Dewar is, like, or I we should we need Dewey?
I think it's Dewar. We're gonna call him?
Dewar? I've heard of Dewar.
We should know. He played a game for the Maple Leafs. Someone had the volume down. I can't even remember.
Dewey, this is like a younger, cheaper David Camp. It's like, look, seeing what he...
It may be better.
Might be better. It's like, why did we sign Camp to like a four-year deal at 2.1? It's like... Anyways, I mean,
well,
it's good.
Hold on. Let's pump the brakes on that for a second. Because when we signed Camp to that deal... We weren't signing him for the Camp that he's been this season. Like, for what he was in his Leafs tenure before that, he was an excellent shutdown centerman. And we were signing him thinking he can center a third line that will handle all the defensive responsibilities. He was constantly bringing the puck from our end into the he'd take the faceoff on our end. It would end up in the other team's end. And that's where the next faceoff would be. And that was his job. And he was great at it. And then we signed him to a deal that basically meant he had to keep doing that for him to meet that contract value. And he hasn't been anywhere near that this season. He's been like a fringe fourth line center. And from what I understand from Dewar, he's not better than Camp. Like, he's not going to be pushing for a third line center spot ahead of Camp. Camp is ahead of Dewar in the depth chart. He does what Dewar does, but better. So it's we have two centers now that are defensively minded and will probably be buried in our own end.
I mean, you can say defensive minded, or you can call them like a black hole offensively. It depends on your glass half full or half
right.
shut. But like I look at our bottom six. Yeah, right. Like you mentioned it, Ryan. Like depth scoring was where we've struggled so much. Like we've had to like Domi kind of works on the second line with Nylander, but it's like I wonder how much that is just the Nylander effect. And like Tavares on the third line I don't think is a long-term solution. Like we just seem to have this like rotating cast of bottom six players that can't put the puck in the net. No shade meant to be thrown at Bobby McMahon. I guess maybe he's the answer. Maybe Bobby McMahon is the emergence of Bobby is the best deadline acquisition we could have had. I don't know. I would give him maybe a C because I'm happy with Labushkin, but like that's a generous C. But actually, you know what? I'm in a bad mood because he lost against Boston. You talk about we had some rough patches, lately, Steven. Call it out. We totally blew it against the two most important games of the season. I give Brad a C minus.
Where are you at, Steven?
D for Brad. I'd go D. I think I said it at the beginning. This is the least significant. This is the least significant deadline day we've had since probably that year that we brought in Brian Boyle and nothing else. I would say that at least we brought in a couple of guys. But when you've got the likely MVP of the league, a 70-goal man, and you don't just try to capture... like ride that lightning a little bit and shore up the team. I just feel like, especially when you look at what the other teams that are on our level did, I think it's a fail. So I think it's a D based on just like the execution, but then also just the planning of the fact that I think there were deals to be made that Brad wasn't able to figure out how. He was obviously cooking up something, because along with the acquiring of Ilya Lyubushkin, and DeWar was retaining a lot of salary, right, on those guys. Or, you know, maybe it saved an extra $1 million or so, right? With the addition of the LTIR money we're getting from Klingberg, the Leafs had cap space to work with. And, like, we used some of those assets, even though, yeah, they're fourth, fifth-round picks, like, not worth much. It's still, like, now picks we don't have to use for other moves or whatever else. And it's basically going to go to waste because we didn't maximize the cap space. Like, the conversation with a lot of other teams like Vegas is, how are they even, you know, making this work under the cap? Like, we used to be that team, absolutely maximizing every dime of cap space, where we're just going to have, like, an extra couple million going into the playoffs that could have been that third line center we've needed since September. Or, like a single right shot defenseman. Like, so I think that's pretty remarkable. And I really just can't get over the fact that the third line center situation, like, we started the season with William Nylander at third line center.
And, like, Minton.
Yes, Fraser Minton. That's how big of a hole it was. And they didn't spend it. Like, that first round pick better be used for, I don't even know. I don't even, like, remarkable. You know what it actually felt like that hurt us a little bit? We'll find out later in the summer, whatever the deals are, when, you know, people start getting leaky. But the fact that we didn't have a second round pick, it feels like hurt us quite a bit, because you saw a lot of moves.
I don't buy that. Like,
for seconds.
Each pick has a value, right? So, like, you can trade away a first and get a third back or something like that, or get two thirds back, and then you end up at the value. Or you just trade down. Like remember when we traded away Mrazek? It's like, oh, we traded a first, but then got a second round pick. Like, we moved down 10 spots in the draft. It's like, each thing has a value. So if there's a player that's like, oh no, the player I want is specifically in rounds 30 to 60, and then otherwise I'm not doing anything, it's like, come on.
We're in the window right now. We're going to make the playoffs this year. We have a first round matchup against Boston. There's like a 70% chance of that. And yes, we took two L's against them, but I still think it's a team the Leafs have a chance against. And you needed to shore things up. Like, you just needed to. I would have traded the first round pick for somebody. The second round pick, or we didn't have one, sorry. Fraser Minton, something. You cannot go into this playoff series with this hole at third line center.
All right. Let me try and bring this up a nut. I honestly didn't think I'd be coming into this pod being the highest on our trade deadline for how I was feeling about it, but clearly you guys are a couple sour notes over there. So let me try and sway you, because I don't think it was as bad as a D. Maybe somewhere around a C or C plus, I think is fair. You said C minus. But the next year, like every year that you go into the trade deadline, you have X amount of picks and prospects to trade. And last year, Kyle Dubas made the bet. He looked at our team and said, this is the best shot. Maybe he was just saying that because it was the last year of his contract. He's like, I'm just going to go for it here. I don't know. But he brought in like three impact players and three more depth players. We were the number one busiest team at the trade deadline. Traded away everything. All of this last year's picks, a bunch of this year's picks, a bunch of next year's picks. And so, and it kind of worked. We got passed around, whoopee, and then lost in the second round. This year we're coming into it and we had a first round pick, but no second round pick. And we're like, should we trade this first round pick? Next year, we have zero picks to trade in the first round. Because we're going to be at the same point next year, the 2024-2025 season, where we're like, Austin Matthews is getting 70 goals again. We have all these new players because we have the massive turnover every year. We're probably going to be about 7th, 8th, or 9th in the league, 3rd in the division, because that's what we do. And we're going to be looking at it and saying, should we be trading? Should we be going all in and going for it this year? But guess what's going to happen? We're going to have nothing to trade because we have no picks to trade that year. So it's not the worst thing that we didn't trade our first-round pick for Hanifin or for Lindholm, who would have just walked at the end of the season, because then, one, you just got to replace him in free agency again, and two, next year you're going to be stuck with not only needing stuff again because we're going to have holes, but they're going to have nothing to trade next year either. So this year, which is clearly our team is not the best it's been, it's probably not the best it's going to be. Next year has to be better because there's no way we're going to get burned by half a season of horrible Samsonov again, half a season of wasted Klingberg who's now done, and Bertuzzi who sucks, and Domi who sucks, and like all these missed things. There's no way that's going to happen 2 years in a row, I hope. So it's not the worst to hold on to these things, and whoever we draft that year will become a prospect, and we can move them at next year's deadline. It's not like that pick is now gone, and we're never going to do anything with it again.
No, that's Ryan. That's not the way it works. It's funny. It's like teams with draft picks, they have high value. As soon as you draft a player, the value goes way down. You almost never see teams trade a player a year out.
Hold on, though. It's like they say, like,
you know what this first-round pick could be? It could be this real player.
Okay, you're right, Tim, except when a draft pick has all of a sudden become something. That's why you have to draft well. Like, Matthew Nyes, I'm sure, had zero. Like, that was a second-round pick. And, like, a second-round pick is not, a huge amount of trade capital in this league, but then all of a sudden he starts playing like a first round pick, and now he's like a roster player, and now he has serious trade value. So it only doesn't mean anything because now you pick someone that, like, oh, we don't need a middling left winger who's small, until that middling left winger small becomes good, then all of a sudden people want him.
Until that middling winger goes on a 34 game point streak, thank you, Easton Cowan.
Exactly.
I struggle, though. I struggle with this idea that it's the first round pick is worth more than the player, and that, like, the first round pick who hasn't even been picked yet is really going to be able to help this team, like, in the short term. Like, I know Austin Matthews just re-signed that deal, but, like, we're going to need that guy on the team in the next 1 to 2 years. I don't know that that's going to be the case. We don't know that Austin Matthews is going to score 70 goals next year. We don't know that the team's going to be at the same level that it's at. Like, it's just because I'm crazy, but, like, I worry every year, like, okay, like, is this that year that now the Leafs aren't going to be good anymore, right? Like, we were good. We kept getting better. Our guys kept getting better, and then it's just going down. And that happens with every team eventually, right? And it could be us. I feel like if Elias Lindholm could have come to the Maple Leafs and the price was the first round pick and they didn't do it, I think that's a travesty.
Fair, but it wasn't. It was the first round pick and a prospect. It's almost like those have value, Tim.
Well, okay.
And no, some other, like, it was everything.
I was hearing this the other day, and I kind of totally believe it now, where the Leafs, because they sometimes seem to be the center of the hockey universe, I think their picks get overvalued a lot for what they are. Like, Matthew Nyes turned out to be a great player, but Matthew Nyes was not even the highest ranked prospect, or like a very highly ranked prospect going into that season at Minnesota, that he ended up tearing it up and joining the Maple Leafs. But, like, Fraser Minton, right now, this was, like, before the season started, or, like, right after the season started. He was ranked as the 150th best player in the NHL under the age of 23. Versus, like, the guy that Vegas traded plus the first-round pick to get Thomas Hertl was, like, the 50th. So, like, how much value does the 150th best player under 23, how much is that actually worth? Like, is Fraser Minton actually going to be able to help out the Maple Leafs? Feels like we should have traded him.
Well, I don't know. For what? Like, what do you want to trade Fraser Minton for?
Elias Lindholm.
No, but Steven, you can't trade for a guy who's going to walk. We've gone down that road before. Like, if you're going to trade for these guys, you got to have hopes of re-signing them, or trade for guys with term on their deal or something. Like, you want another O'Reilly where you trade the farm and then you get them for 20 games and they're gone?
But, well, okay, so, like, Ryan O'Reilly, that was a bad situation because he didn't want to be here anymore. We offered
him money. We thought he did. Lindholm made it very clear. I want to be in the States. Hannafin, the same thing. Like, those were the big fish who really fit our needs. And they said, we don't want to play in Canada. So what are we supposed to do?
I don't know. It's a long it's hard for me to want to just – Austin Matthews is having a 70-goal season. It's hard for me to admit that, like, we need to have our eyes set on potentially trying to win the Cup next year. Like –
Well, and here's the thing about next year. Like, next year, like you said, Ryan, we have no – you said no draft pick in the first round. We have no draft pick in the first four rounds.
Exactly.
It's the cover and like the I mean, we have a few prospects, but like overall, this next year, Matthews is getting a raise. Nylander is getting a big raise. Bobby McMahon, he's gonna be, who knows on what Bobby McMahon's gonna be doing next year. UFA, unfortunately. But Tavares is gonna be 1 year older. Who knows what's up with, I mean, this last year of Marner's contract, but I don't know if next year Leafs are going to be that, like, top 10 team in the league. Like, this year, like, I mentioned, you said, like, oh, Bertuzzi sucks and Domi sucks, but, like, Bertuzzi's turning it around. Domi only makes $3 million. He's only $600K above David Kampf. It's not like these guys are anchors waiting down the team. Like, overall, I'm not so
for large parts of the season, those guys have been anchors weighing down this team. Like, yes. How many games have we lost solely because Samsonov forgot how to play hockey for 2 months? Probably 10.
Who's our goaltenders next year?
Yes, to be determined. Joseph Woll.
We currently have Joseph Woll.
And Martin Jones.
Dennis Hildeby was like the 40-something at the best prospect under 20. That's pretty good.
Guys, listen. Our team this year, I bet you can list the number of players on one hand who have been, you'd say, for what we expected this player to be, they exceeded that expectation.
Oh.
Jones, Matthews, Nylander,
Riley.
Bobby McMahon.
Bobby McMahon, that's five. Can you give me a sixth?
I'm going to say Marner's been good.
No, we didn't not like him for the first 40 games of the season. Give me a break.
The guy's at 76 points.
Get paid for more than that.
Get your sixth right. finger. One hand, right. six
Benoit,
fingers.
Six fingers. All right.
Joe Woll. There's guys, but they're not.
Joe Woll's played like 12 games this year. Like he's been injured. Is that your expectation?
Spinning, though, a little bit positive. Tim did bring this up that, like, it sort of feels like a deadline acquisition having Max Domi be so much better and mm-hmm. Tyler Bertuzzi being so much better and those guys playing the exact kind of hockey that we're going to be playing in the playoffs. Yep. That does feel like a deadline acquisition, getting the guys that, you know, we should have had in September, right? Like, we've had them,
yes.
It was, you know, the one silver lining of those horrible games against Boston is we out-muscled them. We pushed them around a little bit. I mean, sure, they put the puck in the net and made it look like they wanted to win more than we did, but and we kind of inspired them to go get Patrick Maroon, which is the worst.
That's the worst.
Yeah, it is the worst. We all agree on that one. Okay, but like on that note, the players who we brought in, like the one thing they all have in common is size. They're all especially our two blue liners we brought in, big guys. Edmondson's our new biggest defense that's out there now, and you look at that as a common theme of these players that Brad's been trying to bring in. You think of Domi and Bertuzzi and now these guys, like especially Edmondson. He's bringing in guys who have had a history of their best hockey that they've played is in the playoffs. So maybe the jury needs to still be out and we can't make a call on this team as a whole, not just the guys we brought at the deadline, but the team as a whole and all of Brad's moves until we see what they are in the playoffs. Cause it kind of feels like all year, that's kind of what he was building. I wouldn't say that our defense looks very playoff ready, but maybe it'll tell a different tale once playoff hockey starts.
You know, we play Boston the last couple games, right? And we lose both of them. And I can't get over the fact that, like, we look at Boston's team, even though they beat us, it's like they are beatable because that roster's insane. And yet they're going to go into the playoffs with it. Like, it doesn't look as good as it seems to be. So, yeah, you are right that, like, you know, I'm sure they got faith, just like we do, that, like, we can do it. And I don't know. It gives me, like, I'm really pumped for even just the game on Thursday to see if the guys can really keep it going. This playoff energy, getting really violent, getting engaged into the game physically. I'm like, I don't know. There was it's tough too. We talk about these deals that like didn't get made. Like there was a lot of weird situations because you bring up the guys that did not want to play in Canada. That's not common. That like. Two of the top five guys at the deadline don't want to play in a country that has seven of the NHL teams. Vladimir Tarasenko would have been a great addition for the Maple Leafs. He wanted to play in Florida. Well, yep. What are you going to do about that? Like a handful of those types of moves, I guess. And then there's just the long list of teams that just aren't going to trade with the Maple Leafs. Jake Guentzel would have been a great ad for the Maple Leafs. Kyle Dubas is not trading. Like, when you count out Kyle Dubas, the guys that don't want to play in Canada, the Russians that want to play in Florida, we're left with like 12 guys that the Leafs could have traded for at the deadline. They got three of them, so I guess four of them. So I guess
we should have just dangled a couple guys from the Sioux in front of Kyle Dubas, and Guentzel would have been sent here. Is Wayne Simmons still around?
I can't remember if he's actively employed by the Maple Leafs or not.
He was on the TSN trade day panel. He was there for 8 hours, so he was unavailable. Sorry.
Oh, geez, he's busy.
Yeah. Leaves the panel midday, you've been traded.
I feel like we've kind of gotten into it, but was there a move that you wish the Maple Leafs would have made that got made considering the cost? I know, Ryan, you've already kind of expressed how you feel about the first-round pick, but there was a lot of big deals that day. Anything that you guys wish would have been made?
I like the Toffoli trade that Winnipeg made. That felt like a good one. I think it only cost like a second and a third or something. Maybe – actually, yeah, I can pull it up quickly. Third round pick, a second round pick, and they retained 50% of Toffoli's contract. Actually, no, it's like $3 or $4 million, so retained a couple million bucks. I don't know. I mean, he's not a center, so like here I was complaining that we didn't fill any of our holes, and that also went to fill our hole. But you know what it would have filled? Our depth scoring problem. Like you could bet that he'd be good for a few goals in the playoffs, and that looked attractive to me to not cost a first round pick. So I think I would have been interested in the Toffoli deal.
I got two deals.
Oh, hit us with it, Tim.
First, I missed this one. Went down. Nick Patan was traded to the Rangers.
I saw that one.
That guy's still around.
Who was it? Who was it again?
From Minnesota to the Rangers for Turner Elson.
I do not believe he's playing in the NHL though for Minnesota. I remember I looked him up after that. Like he's bounced in between. Like, and he plays great in the AHL still. He's the same guy. Like, over a point a game in the A. Crazy.
Can never make the jump.
Yeah.
What's your other trade?
Actually, scrolling through, I have a couple other.
Do you have a serious
one? I'm always serious. Even, like, Florida picking up Kyle Okposo. Like, what's funny, I saw a comparison. Kyle Okposo is very similar to Nick Foligno stat-wise as far as what he brings. And it costs, like, a seventh-round pick. Going to Florida. So it was like, 2 years ago, two first round picks or no, was that what
it,
no.
No, it was a first and two fourths.
A first and two fourths. I remember
for the double retain, yeah.
But it's like, well, maybe that would have been acceptable. But real serious, Mitch Marner. We haven't talked about it. He's dealing with a lower body injury.
I thought you were talking about a trade for a second.
No, what Mitch are you Marner doing? Is a lower body injury. Keep him out for a month and a half.
Oh.
Boom. $11 million of cap space. Come on over Thomas Hurdle or anyone else.
That Hurdle
that's
deal
the real
wild.
Thing. Just, I think it's a lacerated spleen that Mark Stone is dealing with now, but tell ya, Vegas has the science right. down. I don't know
do,
how you lacerate
No, that's
your
a good
spleen.
Point, though. Wait, do either of you guys know where your spleen is?
Inside you, I think.
Well, okay. No?
No, I don't know where my spleen is.
How does it get I don't know either. How does it get lacerated? Isn't it inside of you? Can't you,
hey,
you
listen,
swallow
what happen-
a razor
what
blade?
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I hear that's what goes down.
That one's crazy. I saw that one come across, and like, it was nuts because that wasn't even a guy who was like on anybody's radar as a possible deadline guy. I think he went for like a first and whatever it was. Yeah, 2026.
You know what there was with that trade, actually? It was a prospect.
Yeah, there was their like, number one prospect, basically. Like, their Matthew Nyes-esque level prospect before he joined the Maple Leafs. So, like, a not-nothing prospect. But that deal is crazy. It, again, like, doesn't – I don't even understand how they're going to keep him around. But, like, he's a center. He can play. It's crazy. I was thinking about it from the Sharks' perspective. Like, what are they even doing? Like
they're just getting out of paying the money.
But like it's not like he was on an insane deal anyway. Like
Well, he had like 6 years left at $8 million.
For how good he was. Like, it's just like, who's playing there? Like, they traded their other best player last year at the deadline. I don't
know. Michael Granlund.
They're giving off Moneyball Oakland A's vibes. Maybe they're like the Coyotes and they're just hurting for money. They're just trading away guys just to not pay the salaries or something like that. Keep some other people employed.
So what we've learned from this exercise is Tim had zero actual trades that he wanted to bring to this table here.
Steven, I wanted.
Did you have any?
I'm just not happy.
On my radar before the deadline, and then after seeing what he went for at the deadline, still on my radar was Alexander Wennberg from the Kraken. Center could have absolutely slotted in on the third line, or even this weird second line that John Tavares doesn't play on, something like that. Mm-hmm. He went for like a second round pick, and I don't even know, was it like a fifth? Or a
second
sixth?
And a fourth. Conditional fourth.
Hang on. A 2024 second rounder and a fourth rounder in 2025, half retained, to the Rangers. I have zero clue why we were not in on that deal at a higher value, just considering how much more we needed a third line center than the New York Rangers did. So that's the one that.
So where I think it comes down to is like it's almost a lack of creativity. Like they were saying, oh, it's going to cost a second and a fourth to beat the Rangers offer. And Brad was like, well, we don't have a second, so I guess we can't get in on that. Then you look over and you see like Vegas making these crazy deals to bring in like Hurdle with like 6 years of retained salary. And you heard about Vancouver thinking about flipping Lindholm to Boston so that they can go and make deals with Pittsburgh and like all this crazy stuff. Like, we couldn't have, like, even saw it as late as last year. Like, we traded away players, brought in a third for Engvall and a first for Sandin. Like, didn't we have anything that we could have traded to get a second-round pick, and then we could use that to flip to get this guy? Like, I agree, Steven. That would have been great. That would have exactly fit our center depth need there. And it's almost just like a lack of creativity from Brad to say, how can we get the assets to get this done? It's not just, I have a first-round pick. What does that buy? I have a third-round pick. What does that buy? Like, you have to do a little more digging than that.
You know, upon further review, I'm going to up my rating a little bit, because as much as I don't love the trades that Brad made, he didn't. I wouldn't say he made any egregious mistakes. I think Steven meant as far as like, oh, what trades went down that like maybe or could have gone down that didn't. I remember seeing a rumor saying that Leafs were talking to about like Parayko from St. Louis or like a few of these other guys. Like, oh, could you imagine if Brad went out and brought in like a boat anchor of a contract? I'm sure Parayko is good, but he's already on the decline. He's 30 and signed for another like 7 years. Like, nothing Brad did or didn't do today is going to have much of an impact going forward. Like, I wouldn't say
that's basically just saying Brad did nothing, so at least he didn't screw anything up.
Exactly.
You wonder though, like, the Sandin last year, right, gets moved out for a first, and like this year, where we've made all these deals, Liljegren's still sitting on the third pair. I'm really not even that convinced he's going to be playing on the roster come playoff time again this year. Like, he's in the final year of his deal. I'm not sure if he's UFA or RFA, but like, how do you not move that one out, you know? Nick Robertson, like, there's rumors about him. Yeah, you move him out, able to get some picks and make something happen as well. Yeah. A lack of creativity. I'm bringing my rating down to balance out Tim bringing his rating up. So we're going to go D minus. That's
my
the
negotiations
grade.
Have failed.
I got a lot of D minuses. A lot of D minuses. I got one in my finance class, freshman year or sophomore year of college. I got one in like a science class in high school one time, a D minus. So very familiar with the D minus. Brad and I are aligned.
I don't know if I would have done the whole trade because I didn't need all of it, but the Oilers picked up Henrique, and I think the similar aspect from what you were talking, Steven, like that would have really been nice for our center depth there. And I mean, they also picked up Carrick, and there was like double salary retained, and like I don't know how it would have worked for us to just get Henrique or what cap we would have had to have retained, but that would have been an okay one as well. But I imagine that probably would have cost the first, so I don't know.
Did you guys say that San Jose is retaining salary on the Tomas Hertl deal?
Yeah. Yes.
Like they're 6 retaining... years, like 17% or something.
What?
Yeah. Well, I mean...
How? That player has to be so good, right? That pick that they make and the prospect to be worth retaining salary on another man that's playing against you. How do you even operate the team on that? That's insanity. How is worth it?
What's insane is they're retaining $1.4 million for the next 6 years. They're already retaining on Erik Karlsson for the next 4 years. And Brett Burns, like, next year as well. Like, they cannot trade any Shark player you trade for. They cannot retain salary. They've handcuffed themselves.
That if we're paying for them to be in the league, the Leafs' revenue pays for these guys to be in the league. Move them to – Ryan, pick a state.
Nebraska.
Montana.
Name a state, Ryan. Name five states.
Is Nebraska not a state?
A state. I just to challenge your knowledge of the United States of America.
I'll name your five states that don't have a hockey team right now. Are you ready? We have Nebraska. We have Kansas City. Is that a state?
Do you want me to answer? Yeah.
Kansas. Ryan. Is Kansas the state? And
Kansas City is the state.
Okay, Kansas. Alaska.
Okay, that
Hawaii.
Counts. Okay.
And one more. Ohio. How'd I do?
Oh, incorrect. You should have quit while you're ahead.
Ohio has a team. Kansas City is technically a city that's in two states. It's in Kansas and in a state called Missouri.
See, how are you testing me on this? You Americans are so backwards. Pick a state, Kansas. Give me a break.
Of note that I didn't. Martin Jones is currently being paid by San Jose for another 3 years.
We're just roasting San Jose here.
I just don't know how that even like. I just couldn't get over that. Like, who's the good players on your team? Like, they drafted Will Smith last year. They've got a hand. They're always high up in the draft. Like, at some point in the next 3 to 4 years, you'd think they'd want to be good. You're trading away all your best players.
They have Alex Barabanov. You remember him?
Those were some, like, that was a high, like, they got a lot for that hurdle trade, though. They got a first, a very valuable, good prospect.
Who doesn't play in the NHL, though? Like, you just don't know.
Yeah, but you're saying, like, that, like, Thomas Hurdle isn't, like, the Vegas Golden Knights' new best player. Like, that was a pretty expensive cost to pay for Hurdle, but that's what, like, he got him under contract for the next 6 years at a retained cap.
You just never know. Like, you remember when Vegas traded for Mark Stone, mm-hmm. and they traded their, like, best prospect at the time, Erik Brännström, to the... Yeah. And he's done almost nothing, you know? Like...
You never know.
They're idiots. They are absolute morons.
Idiots with more hardware than us, so...
Do they?
Are we talking about Vegas?
I thought you were talking about the Sens.
I thought we were talking about the Sharks.
Mark Stone came from the Sens.
No, but I'm talking about the Sharks. That's where I'm coming around to. The Sens are dumb, too.
We're talking about different teams here. No idea what we're talking about.
The Leafs. That's why we can keep it Leafs talk only.
Tim, name a player that played for both the Sharks and the Sens. Go.
Ooh.
Not Erik Karlsson.
Erik Karlsson started it.
Jonathan Chichu.
Wow, that was impressive, Tim.
Absolutely.
He's quick. Try to keep him around.
Danny Heatley.
Oh, Tim, you're too good. You're Googling this, aren't you?
No.
You're fast on the Google search.
How do you not know these things? This is essential NHL knowledge.
And the Sharks. I'm the smartest person on this pod. I can't think of any.
That's why we don't talk about finance. Do you want to talk about lines at all, about where the new guys are slotting in? It's still pretty new at, like...
I feel like we don't know at this point because we haven't seen anything with Mitch Marner in the lab. So maybe we save that for a future pod when we kind of see what Keith's thinking and then
we can discuss, though, what we want to see.
What do you want?
Well, I guess the number one goal is who is going to be playing on this third line, because you can see a world where... David Kampf or Connor Duehr can work on this third line if you play them with guys who aren't as strong defensively, right? So, like, I could see a world where Nick Robertson and Max Domi are Kampf's line mates, and they're essentially playing a two-man game in the offensive zone to try to score goals while David Kampf keeps them honest. I could see that working, or Connor Duehr or something like that. But otherwise, I have a hard time. Like, I'll be very curious to see what Sheldon Keefe figures out, because I don't see Max Domi remaining on the second line as center and John Tavares on the third line.
I think that's just it. The fact that we did bring in a center who I'm assuming we're going to want them. Like, I would say it's a fairly safe bet that Dewar is going to be our fourth line center and Camp's going to be our third line center. At least that's what we're going to try first and see if that works. So I think that that's going to force Tavares to go back to that 2C position, which I think is fine. That's probably where he's going to end up back in the playoffs anyway, although it's good to know that we have some other stuff that might work if we need to try it with Domi there. I've seen some stuff online suggesting that maybe Matthew Nyes comes down to the third line and Tyler Bertuzzi goes up with Matthews Marner to try that, since Nyes hasn't been putting the puck in the net of late, which is an interesting idea. Like, obviously, like Matthew Nyes, but I think he would scratch the same itch that a Nick Robertson could in that position. I think I'd rather keep Nyes in the top six. We don't have a lot that's worked there, and we know he has, so I think I'd try that.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I wish I had a better answer. I'd be kind of interested to see, like, I know Robertson's kind of up and down. Holmberg, maybe he makes a resurgence. Bobby McMahon, you guys think he'll move further up the lineup than what he is, or you think he's kind 10 of goals. Like,
further than the third line? You mean the top six?
Yeah.
Well, he has some chem with John Tavares.
John Tavares is chem with everyone. That's why everyone gets a huge contract.
Well, he didn't always have chem with Ilya Mikheyev and William Nylander. I don't know. Like,
well, no. So, like, that's a good point. Like, it's not everyone works there. Like, how many combinations have we seen of Tavares, Nylander, and X that just doesn't work? Like, Kerfoot didn't necessarily have great chemistry with John Tavares. He didn't score as much as Bobby McMahon did. He's a certified goal scorer like Tyler Toffoli. But, like, if you could put Bobby McMahon on that second line, which I don't think we'll do, but for thought experiment, let's say he goes to that second line, and let's just say Bertuzzi does go up to that top line with Matthews Marner.
Yeah.
Then you have a third line that's, like, Camp with Domi and Nyes. That's kind of interesting. And then you have a fourth line with Nick Robertson or Holmberg or something, along with...
Don't forget Yarncrook.
Reeves. And, yeah, Yarncrook has to go in here. Forgot about that guy. So
maybe, I did, too.
But, like, maybe, like... The thing about having depth, which is nice, is, like, imagine a fourth line with Matthew Nyes on it. Like, your fourth line, all of a sudden, and he gets to go down there and just, like, play hockey and score goals. Like, we've seen what he's done on the top line facing other teams' top pairs and you know, the Pasternak's of the league and such. But, like, you put that guy on a lower in the lineup, and maybe that's where your depth scoring is going to come from. So it opens up some interesting doors for sure.
I anticipate an obnoxious amount of movement in the last month or so of the season. Like,
yeah,
every game's got to be something different. There's almost no reason not to try every single one of these things. We're locked into a 72% chance that we're playing Boston in round one, likely not with home ice advantage. So offensively...
But at some point, you need to settle on something and get some chem going. Like, if you're switching stuff right up till game 82... then you don't really have anything set in stone come game one of the playoffs. Like, I think you want an established lineup or, like, some sort of plan before game one that you've tried for, like, several games in a row and you know this will work, right? Like, the goal should be to know what you do in the playoffs before game 72 so you're ready by game 82, right?
That would be logical. I don't think I've ever seen it happen, though. Leafs are always just cycling players in and out. Except for the one player whose name hasn't come up this pod, whose name always seems to have to come up. Does Ryan Reeves stay in the lineup?
No. I was loving...
He's 100% staying in the lineup. Have you not been paying attention?
Did you like it when the game on Saturday or whatever, sorry, whatever night that was against Boston, I think it was Thursday or something like that, when it was getting real violent and you're seeing all the clips, you know, after the whistle, John Tavares mixing it up, everybody getting up in each other's face, and they just panned to Ryan Reeves on the bench? What are you going to do about it? Like, he's never out there. It doesn't matter. He's never out there. Like, I just don't know. I'd love him to be out there and be a physical presence and matter, but, like, it just hasn't worked out that way because these guys are never on the ice.
Do you know who Connor Dwar's most frequent line mate was when he was playing on Minnesota?
I do not.
Jonathan Chichu.
Kaprizov.
Ryan Reeves. His most frequent line mate. So you can bet your bottom dollar that those two are going to be a pair on our fourth line, probably for the rest of the season and in the playoffs.
I forgot Reeves came from Minnesota.
Yep.
Interesting.
So there's your answer, Steven.
And how did they do?
They're Minnesota. They're very mediocre.
That's crazy.
I think he'll be on the ice for playoffs. He's actually played very well the past, I don't know, month or couple months. Like, since he came back from his Robota Island treatment, he's been pretty good. I was actually thinking about Ryan Reeves because I came into the season hating the guy, and I still hate him a little bit. Like, he's been such a dirty career, and I just, like, hate some of the stuff he does. But you know what? He's actually not done anything dirty since coming to the Leafs. Like, if I was just looking at it as a closed box, what has he done to the Leafs? Well, he started out the season sucking. He was so bad. But then since then, it's all about what have you done for me lately. He's been a big physical force. He's been in a productive fourth line. He's been on a line that scored a few goals. I have no complaints with the way Ryan Reeves has played lately. And if he keeps playing like that, he's okay to be on my team. But if he does one thing that is scumbag material, I'm writing him off for the rest of my life.
Yeah, like Morgan Riley. Is he written? Oh, wait, no. We love Morgan Riley.
Yeah, Peros doesn't get to make the call as to whether it's a scumbag move or not. He's canceled.
I did see a funny comment online in regards to the, like, John Tortorella $25,000 fine, you know? It was like, you know, Morgan Riley goes to take someone's head off, like, attempted to decapitate a man. It's a $5,000 fine, but John Tortorella yells at a ref, $25,000.
I thought it was $50,000, and he got suspended 2 games for it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It is crazy.
I love, though, that it was him versus Wes McCauley.
Man, Wes is such an ego.
I wonder if Keefe and Tortorella have, like, a little boy club going there. They're basically becoming one and the same. Like, when are we bringing Torts in as an assistant coach? We could just have the hottest head bench in the league. It'll be great.
Oh, man.
And we'll just make Reeves an assistant coach, too. It'll be great. We got him on a contract for 3 years. The back 2 years are coaching staff.
I cannot even imagine if John Tortorella was our coach or anywhere close to it. I don't think it's a good thing for the team.
I guess he's going to miss the game on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fine. We would just be having to deal with some sort of, like, dumb thing he says to the media about the Leafs and how we get all the calls or something dumb like that. I don't care. But yeah, it's a light week of games this week. We have Thursday night hockey, Saturday night hockey, and then we get back to it. But we're basically like a month away from the playoffs and settling in to our 70% chance of playing the Boston Bruins, which I don't know if that's really good for any of our health.
Well, I mean, I think if you look at, I mean, maybe we could answer the question of what do we think our team's chances are now that we know what our playoff roster probably is going to look like, or at least we know what it could look like. What are you guys thinking for our first round matchup against Boston? Because it's very likely that they're going to be our first round opponent. Are you thinking that we're in pretty good shape and we should be the favorites in the series? Is it going to be neck and neck and it's going to come down to game 7 in Boston probably? Are we the far underdogs and we're outclassed? Like, where are you guys at with that?
My answer would have been different if you asked me like a week and a half ago. All it took was 2 games against Boston. It was just like, ugh, I hate these guys. I hate how our team doesn't show up against them. I hate how their team finds another gear. I hate all the memories that dredge up with that black and yellow and, like, people just talking about 4-1. Of course both games are 4-1. I'm over it. It's fine.
I've seen a lot of chatter about how the Leafs went 0-4 against Boston this year. And, like, how much does that mean?
They're in their head.
I remember in the COVID year when we played Montreal like 11 times or 10 times or something, we won like 8 or 9 of those games against Montreal. It was the ridiculous percentage of games that we won. And then the playoffs started, and guess what? They beat us in 7 games. So I don't think it matters that much. Like the games we just saw this week are very different than the games we're going to see in a couple months also against Boston.
I think we have so much history against them, and obviously both teams are so different, but like different now than they have been the last times, right, that we've gone at Boston. I don't think we've played them since 2019. That series like changed my life. Anyway.
Thomas Buchanan's.
I just remember laying on the floor of my friend's apartment at the end of the game 7 and just like rethinking everything that's ever happened. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but when I think back to that and the years before that, I think of a Boston team that was here. Sorry, I'm on camera, so I'm here, and we were down here. Like, sorry, the gap looks small on the screen. A larger gap of difference between the teams, and we still went to 7 games and even led in game 7 mm-hmm. on multiple occasions versus this year where we're a lot closer. But we lost to them 4 times, and I care about that. I do. That makes me not feel good. Like, in those years past, we had, I think, winning records against Boston in the regular season. And we have the last couple of years, even though we haven't played against Boston in the playoffs. So, like, that makes me nervous. I'm still going to pick the – okay, I don't know if I'm going to pick the Leafs. I like our chances because Boston's roster looks like dog water. It's just when you look at it, you're like, really?
Yeah.
The Leafs lost to these guys?
I think for me, the 4 best players that are going to be in that series in no particular order are Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, David Pastrnak. Like, those are the 4 best players. And if those are the 4 best players, after the series is done and we say, man, the best players in that series were those 4 guys, I think we're going to win. But in the past, it's not been. It's like, well, the best 4 players were David Pastrnak, Brad Marchand, Patrick Maroon, and
Travis Frederick.
Like, if that's the case where our star players aren't able to be star players, then for the same reason as every other year, that's why we're going to lose. So it's the deadline today. Like, those are the pieces that should help and maybe can get you 1 or 2 wins. But most of the offense and most of the gamesmanship that's coming is coming from those 3 players particularly. So I think that we could win. I would say I'd like our chances. I think we'll be the underdogs, but definitely nowhere near, like, it could happen. We could win, and it's not like, man, how did the Leafs pull that off? We're not that far behind them. You're right, Steven.
I think, like, looking back last year, I was more impressed with Tampa's team last year and even Florida's team than Boston this year. I hate how Boston just gets in their head, and I feel a little hypocritical because, like, how could I get angry at them, the Leafs, for letting Boston get in their heads when Boston lives rent free in my head? But they're athletes; they should be better than me. I can be a petty fan, but I think it is possible for Leafs to win. Like, I would maybe say like 55-45 Boston Toronto, like. Goaltending, I mean, Ryan, you didn't mention goaltending.
That's a big swing there, yeah.
Yeah, like, I would say that's the biggest difference between our 2 teams. Like, I mean, Lindholm and McAvoy are maybe better than our defense as well, but, like...
Maybe. They're maybe better than our defense. Give me a break. Maybe.
Well, it was impressive, though, to see, even though we lost, how much the Leafs just fed those guys their teeth in that game.
Does it really matter?
I really think it does. I know I was saying in the chat the other day, I hope you agree that over a 7-game stretch of doing that every night, that I feel like the Leafs could keep that. The guys on the Leafs that did that, Domi, Bertuzzi.
I just can't wait for regular season whistles to start being blown and we're going to be physical and get 500 penalties and they're just going to score 500 goals. And they're like, oh, I hope you enjoy the double standard.
I wonder what it is that Kali Yarncrook is always getting mixed up in. Like, every single game, it feels like somebody is really pissed off at Kali Yarncrook. Like, what is he saying? You don't see him doing anything. We had that really impressive physical showing without bringing in a guy who, like, plays physical and is going to be on the ice a lot. And that's Edmondson. So
when we brought in Edmondson, one of the things that was said about him was, oh, this guy really understands the line in the playoffs, and he knows how to play physical and, you know, bait out the other team without taking a penalty, without crossing that line, and he's really good at that. And I'm just thinking, man, like, that's awesome. Like, we always get burned by that. The other teams always seem to be way better at that than we are, and we will take a suspension or get a penalty, whereas they just get away with murder out there. It's going to be so nice to have that guy on our team. But I am so confident that in the first game, Edmondson's going to, like, cross-check a guy in the neck and get suspended for the rest of the series. He's going to pull a Kadri, and he's just going to be gone. Like, it's so obvious what's going to happen here.
That is still the most ridiculous suspension. I think about it all the time. Whenever we're talking about, like, wacky suspensions, Kadri was suspended for all the rest of the games in a series.
Unknown number of games. So, like, it could be anywhere from 3 to 5 games. We don't know.
That has not happened since then. I don't know that it'll happen again.
Creative. That wheel, it was getting three-dimensional when it was spun.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think it did happen once, one other time.
Was it Jonathan Chichu? Hit us with it. Go.
Hey.
I don't think it happened. Maybe.
Oh, you question me?
No, actually, I think you're kind of right. I think it did happen, but it was, like, shorter. It was, like, a game five, and it's, like, you're done for the rest of the series. So it was, like, a maximum of 3 games. Kadri did that, and I think game two.
These are the things that Tim contemplates when he's standing in his bay window looking at the world. He's just like, I remember these suspensions. He's on to Perros.
Ugh, brutal.
Beautiful.
All right, we're running long here.
We only have like a month and a half. We have less than 20 games to get in playoff headspace.
Yep.
Should I start my beard now?
You already started?
Well, no, I've been going since, what is it, March? So January. Yeah, January 23rd is when I started.
All right. I can still see, you know, skin, but
it must just be the camera resolution.
Yeah, that's
right. I'm sure it looks great.
When do you guys officially stop shaving for playoffs? Is it day one?
Usually it's like when we clinch. When we clinch, it's like, all right, it's on.
That's coming up. Tim?
Undetermined. Maybe this is a year where, like, I just shave every day of the playoff, because every other year it hasn't worked.
Just try something new.
The last time you were even clean shaven?
It's happened.
Some playoff stretch somewhere along the line.
You're right. You did shave, like, just before a playoff.
I wanted, the clean slate before a game, before the playoffs 1 year.
What if we all did playoff mustaches?
I'll have to run that one by my wife. We'll see.
I don't think she's going to want to be looking at you anyway if we're playing against Boston. Your wives are going to get a different view of both of you. See you guys at your literal worst.
That is fair.
Like, ugh. When we were watching the game on Thursday the other day, Haley mentioned how she's like, your love for the Leafs is right here and your hatred of Boston is right here.
It's like the years since, it's like, all right, Montreal, ugh, the worst. Columbus, terrible. Tampa, Florida, oh, I hate all those guys. It's been a while since, like, the coals of Boston have been stirred,
It's still fresh enough, though, that, like, as soon as game one starts, it's all gonna rush back. Like,
I look at the rosters like, ugh, I can't stand DeBrusk. Ugh, I can't stand.
DeBrusk is, like, the worst. The he is so roster. Bad. Ugh.
And they have Patrick Maroon.
Right, listen, let's. We have lots of time to brood about Boston here. We don't need to get into that right now.
Yeah. Fine. We'll be done.
It's fine because we're all super confident about the Leafs. And Matthew's going to score 70. And then we'll be great.
He's only on pace for 69 now. He's been slowing down.
We round up.
You know who has, David Pastrnak has 40 goals. You know who has, like, 43? Zach Hyman.
Yup.
I wish we had him still.
It hurts.
Sorry, you said not to end on a low note. High note.
How many goals does Carrick have? Not many.
Not many.
Less than Chichu. We're done. It's done. I don't know what's going on.